All right, everybody. Welcome to the top 10 production experiences with Service Manager and Orchestrator. My name is Nathan Lesnoski, and down here I have Duncan Lindquist. Woo! I'm a Microsoft MVP, and what we're going to be talking about today is our experiences working with System Center, Service Manager, and System Center Orchestrator in production environments, how it's impacted the customers we've worked with, how it's impacted the way that they've worked, and we're going to show you some live production examples of how we've implemented this tool. So, what kind of background are we coming at this with? We've worked with Service Manager for about 5 years. We've worked on the largest implementations of Service Manager in the world. We have production implementations of Service Manager 2012 and Orchestrator 2012. And the real-life experiences we're going to be sharing are principally about IT service management. So how do we transform an IT organization, change the way they work, and make them work in a way which better fits the business? We're going to talk about constructing a service catalog that your end users can go to be able to request services from the business around IT, as well as how IT can request those services in a much more organized way. We're also going to be talking about automation, how it can take those repeatable tasks that you're performing on this reoccurring basis, that take all this time away from you helping your customers, and automate them, so you can take the time that you could alternatively be spending with your customers and give it to them. What are we going to learn? First, we're going to talk about what you can expect. What can you expect from System Center 2012? What can you expect from Service Manager and Orchestrator put together? We're going to talk about how do we start a Service Manager implementation? You know, how do we succeed at this? What is the way in which we approach these applications? Because Service Manager is so much unlike an Exchange project, or a SQL project, or a SharePoint project. It's a very specific kind of project. And because of that uniqueness, it allows us to transform a business in a way that these other systems just simply can't. We're going to talk about some awesome Service Manager plus Orchestrator processes. We've had the opportunity to do some just crazy interesting stuff with Service Manager and Orchestrator. So we're going to show off a couple of those examples today. And we'll talk about what you can do next. All right, so what can you expect? What we've found is that Service Manager and Orchestrator are transformative technologies. We found that these technologies, when you work with a company to implement them, take an IT organization that's largely manual, that's disorganized, that doesn't have documented processes, that's doing a lot of things over and over and over again, we take that organization, and we have the opportunity to be able to cut through the bureaucracy, to be able to cut through the sacred cows, and be able to break down how they do it today and transform with these technologies to be able to help them do it better. That's as simple as that. We're taking the things they're doing now, we're making it more efficient, or letting people do jobs that they're actually interested in. For example, how much do people like creating new users over and over and over and over and over? How much do they like exchanging emails with people back and forth trying to get good requirements? With Service Manager and Orchestrator, we found that in production, we're able to take these inefficient processes and easily make them efficient and help companies to be able to take those manual processes and make them automated processes that have a clear ROI that the users appreciate because things get done faster and that IT appreciates because it's documented and because they're able to see how their environment changes over time and look back in the history. What we found is that the results of this are astounding. Work processes are simply more clear because they're documented. They have to be. Common tasks are automated. People perform tasks which use their skills. You're not just taking a person, putting them in front of a keyboard, and having them do task, 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 over and over and over. We're allowing for people to be able to be effective at using the skills that they've been given. And we see that time and resource spend is much more transparent. Now, is implementing this, does it have some challenges? Absolutely. And that's what we're here to talk about today. How do we start these projects in an effective way? All right. So the first thing we're going to talk about is, how do I get started? How do I framework this project so it's actually able to achieve what we're talking about achieving? The first thing is, you need to include the right people. Service Manager, Orchestrator projects are not just IT projects. They're not like Exchange. They're not like SQL. You're not just installing next, next, next an application, making sure you have the right sizing, and letting it go. This is a project that takes the IT folks and takes the business folks. You sit down and you figure out, how do we want to make the business better? And you have that opportunity to be able to cut through those manual processes that you've been doing for years and be able to discover quick ways that you can transform the business. So you need to include your service desk manager, the people who are responding to and listening to the customers every day. You need to include your system center technology lead. Too many times I see people approach this just the same way they have all their other ITIL-centric projects, where they have these process guys, but they don't have the technology guys. You need to have both of those people. Because it's one thing to take a good request. It's another thing to take that SCCM process that you've worked so hard on and put them together. We also need to include IT leadership. IT leadership wants more transparency. They want to serve the business better. So we want to arm them with the tools and techniques that are component to this tool to allow them to be successful. So we need to include all these people. Now, does it have to be a big, weighty engineered process that has a huge big bang? Absolutely not. This is absolutely something that has low-hanging fruit. It's something where you can transform a business quickly, but including the right people from the beginning allows us to be successful at getting their buy-in and allows them to be able to represent how it's of value to them within the context of the business. The next component of success is starting with services. So what do I mean by a service? We're managing services after all, right? What is a service? A service is something that you deliver to the business. So in IT, you guys are essentially paid by the business to deliver a service that they consume from you. Maybe it's an intranet. Maybe it's a customer ordering application. Maybe it's a web browsing application. Maybe it's an application that the end users, the customers of yours, go out to and browse your website. Maybe it's your ERP system. It's something that they're consuming from you. So we're delivering these services to the business. All too often, nobody's actually sat down and documented what those services actually are. Nobody's documented, what am I actually delivering to the business? What do I want to measure? What do I want to understand? What do I want to do better? So the way we typically start out these engagements is we say, let's talk about what it is that you do. So when we understand what it is that you do, when we understand what it is that you deliver from IT, we can talk about the qualitative aspects of that. We could say, hey, I want to understand its health. So if we're talking about Exchange, simple concept, a lot of people have Exchange, or Active Directory. We want to understand if my Active Directory system is healthy. I want to understand what it costs to run my Active Directory system. I want to understand how quickly I'm responding to my customers in the business. So when I look at my chart up here, I'll have Active Directory, and next to it, I have something called Incident SLA. So I'm understanding whether or not I'm responding to my customers at the rate at which they expect of me. I also have a cost. Each of these systems, they have inherent costs to them. Whether it's Exchange or Link or Active Directory or weather application or whatever it is, it has a cost to deliver. And that cost might not match up to its value for the organization. So we want to understand that. We also have SLA. When our customers ask us for something, we inherently are delivering to them under an SLA. Whether we've promised to them or not, whether we've documented it or not, we have an SLA. So we want to understand whether or not we're achieving that SLA. The awesome thing about this is that these business services are the core to how we're aggregating our work and things that we deliver from IT. So how do we go about doing this? We start on paper or an Excel worksheet. The idea behind it is that before I even start clicking something, we want to get the right people in the room and have the right conversation to be able to say, let's list the things that we do. So in an example, what we're doing is we're saying, all right, we've got Active Directory. What service family is it? We'll call it Microsoft Core Infrastructure. It's owned by a part of the organization. It's got a priority. It's got a status. It's got an owner. Just listing those things alone is something a lot of companies, it's an exercise that people just haven't done. But doing that allows me to make way better decisions because it allows me to really understand what it is that I deliver to the business and how I judge success around that delivery. What I'm going to show you really quick here is just an example of how this list translates into Service Manager. So in Service Manager, I'm in a component of Service Manager. This is one of its two principal user interfaces. Service Manager has both a console experience as well as a web experience, which is used for self-service requests. So in my console experience, I have a listing of these different business services that I was talking about. I have workstation services, I have Active Directory, I have Direct Access, all of these things that I deliver. And when I look at Active Directory, I can see that it has a priority of high. Well, this service is documented now. This service has a status, it has a classification, it has people who own it, it has individuals who are customers, it has affected users. The affected users are those people who are using this application at any given point. The reason why I go through this process of documenting my service is because this becomes this pivot point against which I do my work. I associate my incidents, my service requests, my configuration objects that come from other system center tools with this business service. When I look at the service components, I can see that my Active Directory service is made up of these subcomponents of domain controllers, synchronized for Operations Manager. So when I look at my topology view in Operations Manager, that's synchronized into the business service and Service Manager. It allows me to change control, it allows me to understand it, and allows me to document who's responsible for it. The idea behind this is my starting point. And then against this service, I have the different items of work that I'm performing. So I could see a create new user had occurred, or a remove Active Directory use had occurred, or an incident, something was broken, something was symptomatically wrong with that service. I can see all the different things that I'm performing against that service at an aggregate level. This allows me to organize my services in a much better way. And it forms an opportunity for us to discuss what IT actually delivers to the business. All right. So what's the number two way? Is to choose processes strategically. What do we want to do? We want to choose the work processes that have the best payoff. Sometimes that isn't incident management. A lot of times when I talk about an IT service management system, people say, oh, that's just how we take help desk tickets. Someone calls in and they got something that's broken and that's the tool we use for that. That's certainly one way to understand IT service management, but understanding what you deliver only by what's broken is not a way to manage IT. We want to manage IT under all of its aspects. And that means that we're managing not just what's symptomatically wrong that we need to fix, but the move, add, change requests, the change management operations that we perform in IT, the new service packs, and the new patch applications, and the new deployment of new IT services that we need to manage. Risk and compliance. Risk and compliance is one of the most awesome features of Service Manager. This idea that I can document a risk, like a power outage or like a data disaster, and have this related mitigating activity that helps me to prevent that potential risk of checking my backups or validating that the batteries in my power units are good. Simply the idea of assigning those to people is so powerful. So we have to figure out where's the biggest value, where am I going to have the biggest payoff? So this is an opportunity for us to have that discussion. Also, plan a transform a process. A great tool doesn't make a bad process better. It simply doesn't. If we have a terrible process, we don't just want to take that terrible process and move it into Service Manager. The greatest thing about deploying service management technologies is it's a great opportunity for us to take a look at how we're doing it today and shape it and fix it and reorganize it and deliver that process in a much more concise manner, in a way that fits up to the way in which Service Manager is capable of delivering it and not just tied into limitations of how we delivered it before. Look to a vision and set a vision. And in doing that, that allows us to be able to truly reorganize how we deliver these services from IT. So I'm going to give you a couple examples of where we'll transform processes in IT. The first is incident management. All right. So in bad incident management, what happens? User tries to get to SharePoint. SharePoint's down. Sends in an incident request email. Help! SharePoint's down. Well, the guy on the phone doesn't know anything about SharePoint. And the guy who knows something about SharePoint's out of town. So he doesn't know anything about his configuration. He opens up the configuration doc, and it's a year old, and it has nothing to do with the actual configuration of today. So he starts pinging things. Okay, that didn't really get him anywhere. So that process of determining what's broken is significantly less efficient. How do we improve it? Well, we improve it by taking an incident request that has good data associated. Maybe we capture the error message that he got. Memory capture, is it that he can't access a specific site? Or is it that he can't access a particular page or can't do a certain function? What is it that he can't do? And that's prioritized with good data, because it wasn't just email. Certainly we can receive incidents through email, but it wasn't just email. We also associate that with the service of SharePoint. And then inside of SharePoint, we have its configuration. We can see how SharePoint is configured, and I can troubleshoot it because it's documented in my CMDB. So I got good data about what I'm actually working against, and I've aggregated it to my service. And that's why services are so important, because it helps us to articulate what we deliver, what its configuration is, and helps anybody fix it, or helps me figure out who that right person to fix it is. Here's another example of a process that we can fix. Service Request Manager. I love Service Request Manager. Guy comes in and says, I like a new SharePoint site. Can you have it up by this Friday afternoon? It's really, really, really important. It's usually how they come in. So then you start emailing them back and forth, trying to get requirements, or you call them up and you say, hey, how can I get this thing set up for you in a particular period of time? And it takes forever because you're trying to exchange information through inexact means. What I can do instead of that is I can capture data through a self-service form. And what's awesome about this self-service form is it doesn't take a developer to make this. In all the production implementations that we've done, I've trained someone who has no form creation experience, someone who's just a basic IT admin, he knows how to use a console, and we go out there and we say, here's how you create a form. You want to capture good data from somebody? Here's how you create a form. Here's how you capture a list. Here's how you capture data from the CMDB. Here's how you ask a good question. That all comes in as a good request. And even before it's automated, this is something that's transformed the way that we've captured that new site request, because we've documented where it's supposed to go, we've associated it with our service, and we've asked a good question. That then goes into a documented process of understanding how it is to be deployed inside of our IT environment. This has been a godsend for the companies that we've done service request management for. The idea that I can actually document what it is that we're delivering from the context of IT, that it goes through this approval, and then this person needs to select that it needs to be approved, and then this person's going to do a manual activity before this happens. That significantly speeds up provisioning, ordering, delivery, automation. It allows for me to be truly effective. In this case, you can see that my arrow is going to a manager who's approving this, and I can go and I can do different types of approvals for a business user to be able to actually approve the provisioning of a SharePoint site, or a new workstation, or a new user, whatever it is. We also then can take it one step further. We can take that request and we can automate it. So I can say, not only have I gathered good information, but I've taken that good information and I've automated the provisioning. And I've automated the provisioning in a way which isn't hard, not complicated. This is something that takes only a couple hours to even spin up a really, really complicated provisioning process for SharePoint. This allows for me to take all those manual SharePoint provisioning processes, organize it well, set standards around it, help the user to provide self-service to their needs. All right. Now, around these automations, around these ways in which we're transforming the process, one of the things that we found really helpful is the idea of establishing an ROI around what we're delivering. And it doesn't have to be hard. What is ROI? It doesn't have to be this gigantic, complicated formula that you're going through. This is very straightforward stuff. To say, hey, I want to understand the time savings, maybe some cost avoidance, maybe if I'm deploying faster, I'm serving my users better, whether or not my software and hardware is reduced in its cost, because maybe I'm shipping it straight to the user. I can understand these things. So we go after the low-hanging fruit. We go after things that people do all the time. New user requests, site assignment, new SharePoint sites, application deployment, things that are repeatable, that people don't like having to perform, that happen continually. So let's show a couple example ROIs. And I'm going to go into a demo of each of these requests. And we've deployed each of these in production. So these are examples of production requests that we put out there. So new user request. New user request is probably the most easy, most universal. Everybody's got a new user request. If you've got 200 users, you're maybe doing 25 a year. If you've got 50,000 users or 5,000 users, whatever it is, you're doing thousands of requests a year. That's a lot of cost. So in our ROI, what we're seeing is not only is it that there's an automation around the actual provisioning here, the end user completion. But also, there's communication assets. Because instead of capturing data in an exact way, we're capturing data in a very specific way that allows us to not frustrate our user, because our user doesn't have to keep going back and forth with us to give us good information. But we're also delivering it much faster for them, and we're delivering it through an automation. So, example, in our request, we're doing Active Directory account, the Exchange mailbox, the link account, the phone number for the link, home directory, picture population, manager information, and the Active Directory drink attribute, which you may or may not know about. So we populate all these things, and this allows for us to be able to do it quickly. I, for one, hate doing user requests, so I'm really glad that we don't have to do this anymore. So I'm going to go into my demo system. All right, so what we do in Service Manager is we organize our requests under different contextual areas. And these contextual areas are secured based upon the types of people who should be getting access to them. So, for example, if you're a normal IT person who's got, you know, a fair amount of rights, you might see things like account management or file access or SharePoint or, you know, local applications and things like that. But if you're an end user, you're not going to see all these areas. You're not going to see enterprise computers. You're not going to see networking and servers. You might not see account management. But if you're in HR, you might see account management, right? So we can give them the things that they are going to contextually see that are important to them. Now, inside the context of these requests, we go into a new user request. In a new user request, we're going to ask them certain questions. And these questions could be anything that we want to ask. So I'm going to go and I'm going to create a user. We'll call them Hugh Tested. And he's going to be part of the infrastructure department. He could be part of really any department, but in this case, he is going to be part of infrastructure. And his favorite drink is soda. Let's get submitted. Now, this is submitted as a user. I might be an HR person. And this is then visible through the self-service portal. It allows me to be able to track that request that I've submitted over time from inside the context of the self-service portal. So I can see not only my incidents, but also this new user request that I just kicked off. I can also see the previous request that I kicked off as well. Now, behind the scenes, what's happening is this request was captured in Service Manager, and it was sent into a tool called Orchestrator. And what Orchestrator does is it does all these things. So it comes out here and says, all right, I'm going to take that data that's been sent into from Service Manager, and I'm going to automate the performance of that task. In our case, I took out the approval. You could actually have an approval that sits in front of this process as well. Now, for the new Active Directory user, what we do is we have it pull initialized data, it creates a username, and then it makes decisions based upon the type of user it is. Now, you can see that because I was an infrastructure user, it went from initializing the data from Service Manager, pulling that request, and then because the user was an infrastructure user, it followed this path. Note that it didn't go down the create development user. So it went and created an infrastructure user, enabled him, and then created his Exchange mailbox, got the user, created a phone number and link, created the link user, sent an email to the manager who created the user account with their mailbox, with the mailbox and the password, and it was completed. What's so cool about it is I can see how it performed, when it performed, and then I can see what time each individual task was completed. And then as that is sent through my system, I can see all these different requests that have been sent through at any given point. All my different automations that I've spent all this time on, maybe I'm a really great scripter, and I've just done all these really nice PowerShell automations that I want to be able to perform. Well, I can take that automation and put it inside of a context that I have great visibility to. And the visibility allows for me to be able to then track the request through its lifecycle. So if I refresh this, I'll be able to see that I have the other requests that I asked for. There's my new Active Directory user that I just submitted. That's now been completed. And my service request, after I refresh, will now update to new status, hit completed. So while I've been talking to you, my system has gone out, created a new user, created the Exchange account, all these things, all in place. All right, so that's kind of a simple one, but it's an example of how a service manager is taking that request. Let's go on to something maybe slightly more complicated. Rights assignment. Rights assignment is really interesting, because rights assignment comes up all the time. You'd be shocked by how much ROI we've seen in companies just based on rights assignment. Because rights assignment, it's complicated. You have to ask for the right ask the right questions about the right things. You want to be in particular groups. You want to understand who wants to be in what particular area. So this allows for us to be able to effectively grant rights using the right approvers without IT folks having to go out there and do it manually. So rights assignment, we've used it for SharePoint sites, for folders on file systems, for Exchange mailboxes, and that's been something that we found a lot of value in. So what I'm going to do is do a very quick rights assignment. All right. One of the ones I think is particularly interesting. Is the Exchange mailbox permissions. Because a lot of people need full Exchange mailbox permissions over people's mailboxes. So what we do is we present a data view of all the users in our Active Directory. And if I want, I can jump in and get more information about the user. I find this super interesting and super useful because we can get not just base attributes, but extended attributes. So let's say I want to say, OK, William. Maybe Willard, maybe William. And I want a certain type of permission. So I'm going to ask for a read permission, or change permission, or full access permission. And I have a business justification. And my business justification is I'm his manager. That then allows me not just to capture the data about me doing the request and the performance of that request, but also the fact that I needed to log this for my audit reasons, and also that I didn't want to have to perform it from IT, because this wasn't something that I needed to have my skill set to perform. So this allows for me to be able to perform that automation in a way which is quick, in a way which can have some additional approvals into it, in a way that doesn't have to encumber the normal IT admin. Now, what does that process look like? Let's dig into something called Runbook Designer. So this is the palette under which I design runbooks. So in here, I can see, here's my new Active Directory user runbook, right? Let's go to maybe my Exchange one, my mailbox access request, or my directory changes, or my access requests, right? These are the different types of requests that I have out there that I've been asking for information about. Well, in this process, what I'm doing is I'm using out-of-box capabilities to get data from my runbook. So when I'm looking at my initialized data request, I'm pulling the activity ID, the user, and the rights, all from my service manager process, pushing it into my mailbox user, and then granting the access request in a straight line process. Now, could I inject an approval here? Absolutely. So if I want to inject an approval, I can have it go and pull the guy's user manager attribute, or pull their manager's attribute, or pull a group, whatever it is, based upon the rights. If it's the owner of the company, maybe we just instantly knock it down. We can set all that logic into our automation, and it can be visible, and someone can see why it was successful or why it failed. In that directory changes process, you can see I have that decision logic that exists. So I'm seeing, based upon the success, I'm then defining directions based upon different decision tree criteria to allow it to go to different places. So I can always build in either simple or even complex decision tree structures inside of the context of my automations. All right, let's get into some of them that I think are really, some ones that are really cool. We've had the blessing of being able to work with some very large companies that are trying to do automation. And what we've been so pleased to see with this is that for companies that are doing lots and lots of application deployment, we can arm both their IT people and their users with self-service application installation and self-service installation of operating systems self-service installation of additions and streamed applications, and this has saved immense time. So we're basically enabling users to be able to get applications that they need quickly and be able to get configurations that they need quickly. So what's the value of this? It's a value that allows for me to be able to take that SCCM process that I've built and not have to perform the manual action associated with it over and over and over and over and over. It allows me to arm the users with the ability to request what they need from IT, to do an approval, and then to have it delivered. So what I'm going to do is walk through application installation. I think this is a really neat one. All right. So what I have out here is something that we would usually deliver to all users, right? My account, computers, application devices, and printers. This idea that I've got a computer, I've got applications, I've got printers, I've got these things that I use on a recurring basis. And the first thing I'm going to show is my local application. So there's two things that a user probably wants to do: install an application or remove an application, right? So what I have is a list of applications that they can install. So I have Office Visio, or Office Professional Plus, or Microsoft Link. Now, I know that SCCM has detected probably 5,000 applications that are out there. So if I look out at my console, I've got this thing called All Software, right? So underneath All Software, I've got 473 software items. SCCM has gone out with Asset Intelligence, and it's detected all the applications that I have installed in my entire environment. And it's done a great job of that. But I certainly don't want to give my users the choice of selecting to install each of these individual apps. It's just not something that they're going to want to wade through. It's not something that's relevant to them. So what I'm doing is I'm filtering it. I'm filtering it, and I'm saying only certain applications are going to be visible for installation. The way I've done that is associated with each of my applications, I have different additional criteria that I've associated with it. So I've got a portal display attribute that says, who can see it? I'm tracking, what's its software architecture? And what are its SCCM collection IDs that are used to deploy it? That's super cool, because when I select these, I'm taking advantage of a multi-select list, and then based on this, I can then choose not everybody's PC, but just mine. And I get this also through my integration with SCCM. So SCCM's already pulling the primary user attribute. So it's able to synchronize who's the person who's using that computer on a regular basis. We've also used the custodian attribute. The custodian attribute's allowed us to be able to have additional systems that may not be their primary one, but something they can still control as an end user. So I'm able to manage my applications, my computer. I can see where my computer is located, because I have rights to my computer. And then I can say, why am I asking for this particular application? I want it for testing, maybe old data, maybe job role, whatever it is. So that process allows it then to go out and deploy that application to my computer. How does that happen? Well, that happens through something called a package deployment process. And what we do is we initialize data from Service Manager. This is a repeatable thing. This right here, this block, is sort of a reoccurring set of functions we do anytime we do an automation. We get the data with the activity ID, and then from that, we're pulling that service request, the computer relationship to the service request, which we associated, and the software. So the software is getting all the software that we've associated with that service request as well. And then we add the computer to the collection in SCCM, refresh the collection, and then refresh the client. And that allows us to be able to quickly deploy that application in a way which could have an approval and is in a totally self-service way. That can be used by IT folk simply by not filtering the number of workstations. So let's say you want to give IT people the ability to select to deploy applications. Well, I don't necessarily want to have them messing around in SCCM. Maybe I just hired them yesterday. But I can train them easily on how to deploy applications through a self-service portal like that. So I can give them a whole list of workstations that are out there that might need this application installed, or users, because SCCM 2012 supports user-centric deployment. So I can say, this user needs this application. So target all these people, target the applications, deploy. Now, I've also put in protections. So like, let's say I select to deploy this application to 100 workstations. That could be a mistake, depending upon the app, right? So what I can do is I can insert that approval to make it go through change control, or make it go through a particular group of people to say, yeah, that's okay, you can deploy it, because it's a big enough change, right? So this allows me to do some pretty remarkable things. Now, the next piece of this is something that I think is just, it's ridiculous that we can even do it. What we can do, because of user state virtualization, is we can do workstation reimage. Because what do we have in a workstation, right? We've got user state, we've got applications they use, we've got a computer build that's got a certain sort of set of criteria associated with it. What if I could refresh that, and the user could choose to refresh their machine? Well, this is something that drastically saves time. Because if a user can do it themselves, if my level of organization in my IT shop is to that is at that level, that I've been able to virtualize the state of the user, document the application installation, and push out an OSD process, I can now completely reimage a system using Service Manager and Orchestrator. Some of my colleagues egged me on to reimage the president of our company's system during my demo today, and I thought that probably wouldn't be a good idea. All right, so what I've got out here is something called My Computer. Everybody kind of recognizes My Computer. And in this I have general workstation issue, which is sort of symptomatic. If someone's got a problem with their workstation, they need to go out there and fix it. New requests for workstations, a shopping cart experience, and also upgrade or refresh my operating system. Okay. So the idea that my system is so screwed up that it needs to be refreshed. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be that screwed up, because if I can refresh it in an hour, because maybe it takes that long to stream the bits, or maybe it takes 30 minutes to stream the bits, whatever, why spend 3 hours troubleshooting it? So this gives me a remarkable ability to fix systems quickly. So I can choose the workstation OS, I can choose the PC that I intend to reimage. I can only choose mine in my case. I'll say, do you want to redeploy the existing configuration with no changes? So say, yeah, redeploy with the same software. Or, no, install only the software I now select. So I'll say, all right, I want these apps installed. Submit that. Now, how do I get that configuration? I get that configuration because in Service Manager, I have all my Windows computers out here, right? So all my Windows computers have detected the software that's installed on them. So it can pull the computer, its configuration that it should have, because that's what it had at that moment in time, and the software that's installed on it now, plus what I now, in addition to that, choose. And I can flip it. This isn't just used just for reimaging. Maybe I want to use it for idle processes, or I want to use it for pushing it to a new person, and it needs to be wiped out before that happens. Or a person wants to have two systems. The possibilities on this are endless. Because each software package, like Link here, has got its SCCM collection ID documented. So I'm able to combine those two things to be able to do some pretty awesome automation without a whole lot of complexity. The process behind this is merely really just adding things to collections and pushing it through approvals. So I have some pretty remarkable stuff this is able to accomplish. So only a couple additions in that, too, that didn't really even require much modification to be able to make it happen. All right. So let's go back to our deck here. All right. What's the next thing we should do? Well, wow, there's some really awesome things we can do with automation, right? I mean, we have probably 10 other ones we were going to think about showing, but we just don't have the time, right? How do we even decide what to do first? Well, organize the opportunities. Figure out what has the highest ROI, and then ask the questions before you build it. So what we do is we just use Excel. We sit down in a room, and we say, all right, new user request, or user removal request. What do we need to know? What is it that we need to know to be able to terminate the user? What is it we need to know to create a new user? You build a plan, you ask the questions, and then you put those questions into your form. And in creating that form, it allows for you to easily document those questions in a way which is straightforward to create. Let me show you this real quick. Because usually when I say, oh, it's easy, people don't really believe me. So let's just go into one. So in Service Manager, we have something called service offerings and request offerings. So service offerings are these guys, okay? Categories here, service offerings here, and then the individual request is these individual things, these things that I'm doing. So new SharePoint site, or remove user, or new workstation or laptop request, or new user request. So let's go into the new user request. The new user request is one of the ones that probably has the most relevancy because it's the thing that we demoed first. So I came in here and I said, all right, I got an image. I want to associate that image with my particular request. I've got a template associated with the request, which makes up its process. And then I've got questions. Well, let's say I want to get something else, some other kind of information about it. Let's say, what security clearance does this user have? And then maybe I want this to be a pick list. And from that pick list, I can say, all right, maybe I want to be able to have it be a pick list that has certain types of questions associated with it. So we'll say, all right, he's going to be a high security user, medium security user, a low security user. This information is then mapped to an attribute. So we say, all right, we've put in some custom attributes, which is a really good way to capture this data, by the way. We basically built a sealed management pack that includes all these extra attributes and capture data with it. And we say, here's where that data gets stored. So we're done. Anybody could do that. It's not hard. And what's so awesome about it is it's easy to create the form. It's easy to create the request. Let's say I want to do something maybe a little bit more complex. Let's say, what workstation? So what I can do is I can say, all right, query result. And I'll say configure. And now what I can do is I can say, all right, give me an object. So my object is going to be Windows computer. Now note, this is one of hundreds of classes. I have SQL classes, SharePoint forms, everything that you can think of we can create in here, or is already there from SCUM. Maybe not everything. If you like ice cream sandwiches, you can document that, right? Put in here a display name, or put a constraint. Maybe we want to filter it based upon a user. And then set up display columns, and then say, all right, allow the user to select multiple, maybe has more than one system, and then associate it with that configuration item. And through that association, we're then going to pull it from the runbook. That allows us to be able to easily create these requests. So in Service Manager, I have this very moldable, very straightforward way to be able to capture good data from my users without a lot of complexity. But you start by simply sitting down and saying, what kind of questions do we want to ask? And when you start that way, you're going to have disagreements. You're going to say, I don't need that information. You're going to say, I don't need that information. You'll go back and forth about it. But you'll make the mistakes on your Excel spreadsheet, right? These get worked into your service catalog. So the way we try to set it up, a service catalog now becomes your one-stop shop for stuff from IT. Says anything you need from IT, whether you're an IT person, or you're an end user, or you're an HR user, or you're a manager, is in your service catalog. Anything you want is there. So we want to deliver information from our service catalog that a user can pick from, that's going to serve their needs, that is specific to them. We can use service manager roles to constrain access. It's inside of a SharePoint site, and it allows us to have a significant amount of control around how those users are able to ask for those particular types of requests. Now, that service catalog is sitting on a SharePoint server. So you got a couple choices, and this is something that I want to make sure we stress. You have a couple choices. You can either go with a centralized farm. So if you already have SharePoint 2010 deployed, it's running SharePoint Enterprise Edition, go ahead and use it, right? Put your web part out there and put it inside of your existing SharePoint environment. It'll work great. Also, if you're using Enterprise Edition, you have the opportunity to use Performance Point. And Performance Point is a huge part of delivering great BI to your business users. Not just the key high-level decision makers, but business data for the people who are doing requests, the IT people, the individuals who are directing your IT department, the CEO. You can create data views that are specific to the type of information that they want from you. It's very powerful, and it's very straightforward. You can also go with a foundation server. So if you don't have SharePoint deployed already, and you don't own SharePoint, you could potentially go with a foundation server, but you'll be missing some of the Performance Point features. So that's something you definitely need to be aware of. You also need to make a decision about whether or not it's internal or external only. So you need to determine who's going to use this application and how are they going to use it. All right. And that leads us to not forgetting about business intelligence and reports. So a lot of times when people engage in service management projects, they focus on process, they focus on organizing incidents, they focus on service requests, and that's great. But they totally forget about the idea of delivering great reports. And that's something that 2012 and Service Manager, you have a great capability around. Service Manager 2012 has out-of-box cubes built for data analysis, for understanding the relationship between the systems that you have and you're running, the requests that you're receiving, and the who's been assigned to them, what services they've been active against, what people have been working on them, whether or not they've achieved your service level agreement, all these things that are important to you. So we want to find out what the BDMs want to know, because we want to create reports that are meaningful to them. So what we do is you start off by saying, asking Mr. Business User, asking your end user, asking the IT director, if I had to give you some kind of data, what would it be? And he might say, I want to know if my IT people are delivering on the incidents fast enough, or I want to know how long each service request takes. Ask those questions and then create scorecards around those questions. What we've done is we've basically created these scorecards underneath the context of our main portal, but you can also position these scorecards in these dashboards anywhere in your SharePoint environment that's running SharePoint Enterprise. So in our case, we set up a couple different examples. This is a quick data view. It's very much like Excel, right? We're saying, okay, I've got incidents out here. I've got a percentage of incidents that are breaching their service level objective percentage, 88% actually. We're really, really, apparently really bad at delivering these incidents. We have different categories that have been associated with different types of incidents that are out there. And that's all associated with different types of data that we want to cut into and understand. We also have perhaps a view of incidents around user or incident status, what's out there, what's not out there. Inside this view, I can always drill down into different type of data that I might want to look at. I can always look at different measures. I can always dive into a decomposition tree. So this is a live data that I can dig into. I can also open up these particular views inside of their own environments where I can bring them into different types of visibility. So if I want to say, okay, you know, this is all good, but I'm a much more visual person. So I want to see this by looking at different types of graphs that have different types of data. One of these pictures is worth 1,000 reports. And what's awesome about it is I can use this kind of information against the data that's happening very actively in my environment, although it's slightly behind. It's still very, very close to what's actually occurring in my environment. And it's something that allows me to gain a great deal of visibility in a very visual way. You can use this for health of services. You can put individual service markers in their individual health. You can do incident statuses. You can do whether or not my service requests are being achieved at a particular rate. Calendars for change requests. All sorts of things in here, right? Super valuable. If I want to view it inside of a chart view, or I want to view it inside of a tab view, I have a lot of ways to be able to dig into this data. So that's something that should kind of get your imagination going and saying, hey, how do I do this? Now, the way you do it, the way you create it, is actually, we'll post this up a little bit later. My colleague Duncan wrote a really nice two-part blog series on how to deploy Performance Point and then how to create some sample reports. And that's something that anybody can follow, because this isn't even something that I think a lot of people have experience with, is creating really nice-looking dashboards. But if you follow some of those blog series, I think you'll find that it's actually not as hard as you might think it is. And it has a huge payoff, especially if you focus on saying, hey, Mr. Business User, how can I serve you better? All right. Cool. The next thing I want to stress is size your deployment right. Do not give your service manager server one processor and 4 gig of RAM and expect it to run in a way which runs properly. Because you're going to be like, my service manager environment is too slow. And I'm remote desktoping into the service manager server to run my console, and that's where everything, all the work's performing. You need to size it right. You need to set it up in a way which is actually going to be successful for the number of incidents that you have. I can't stress that enough. Now, what is the minimum deployment? Everybody always asks me that. What's the smallest thing I can put this on? Minimum deployment is 4 servers. But that's for good reason, right? Because we're isolating different things. Could these be virtual servers? Absolutely. But they need to be sized right. So we have minimum deployment is a service manager management server, the data warehouse, which could potentially be co-located with SQL, although most of the times it's not, the web server, which is SharePoint, it could be your enterprise SharePoint farm, an orchestrator, which could be potentially one server. That minimum deployment will serve your smaller companies very well. But if you're a larger company, and maybe you've got 10,000 users, 15,000 users, 20,000 users, whatever, you might need some redundancy in there. You might need to, especially if it's something that's the way in which your users are requesting from you, you need to really be able to capture data and ensure the system's going to be running. So what you do is you have your first management server is your server for your workflows. That's the first server in your management group. And you have additional service manager management servers that your consoles connect to, which within the context of SMSizer will scale linearly. But you add additional service manager management servers to serve additional console users. And then you can have redundancy around your SharePoint web portal. Maybe you have several web servers. You also can have a clustered database server. So it allows for you to make a highly available environment that's sized appropriately. Where do you go for good sizing data? You can go to the Infrastructure Planning and Design Guide. You can go to, which is a great place to start to understand how to size Service Manager properly. You can also use the SMSizer tool, which is really helpful. And you can also go out to what's called the Service Manager Survival Guide, which I have a link to at the end of this presentation that you guys can take advantage of. There's all sorts of awesome resources out there. So I can't stress that enough. Make sure you size your deployment right. Next topic is making sure you have a development environment. So a lot of companies, they install Service Manager, they go, okay, I'm going to create all this stuff. And they put all their customizations inside of like the base management pack. Or they kind of name all their management packs differently, and they don't really name it consistently. And then after they've been using it a while, they notice that their management pack structure is just a total mess. What you want to do is you want to start with a development environment if you're intending to have a system that's going to survive well over a long time and be able to move your customizations from a development world into production. Why would you do that? Well, you do it because you might spend a bunch of time making some really cool requests. And after you've got those really cool requests out there, you don't want them to get broken by people just screwing around with the way they've organized the new requests, right? So what you can do is you can create these new requests inside the context of your development environment. Test them out, export them, or if you're creating them in the context of the authoring tool, create them in the authoring tool, seal them, import them into dev, test. If it works, great. Move it into prod as a sealed management pack. And what's so great about that? It's great because I've validated it in dev, I know it's going to work great, it's version controlled, and I've moved it from point A to point B safely. And if it doesn't fit the way I need it to fit, I put the old version back. So the way we do it is we usually say company name, function, management pack. So the idea behind that is concurrency notifications, concurrency list changes, concurrency SLO. You could say concurrency incident SLO. You could say concurrency incident notifications. Come up with something that fits your organization and how you want to move things from dev to prod. Doesn't have to be complicated, but the idea behind it is each of these has a version, and based on that, you always know what the most recent version is. And that's what's so neat about it. Literally, you could build a whole test environment. If it works out the way you want it to, take all those management packs that you built for the test environment, move it right into prod. Because it's the same thing. It's the exact same management pack that you just moved in there. So you have a great framework to be able to take them from dev to prod. It allows you to test and validate, and also allows you to check performance. All right. Next thing is don't forget training. It's very, very, very important to make sure that you get buy-in from the right people, and also that when you're deploying, you train people to be successful. That doesn't mean they have to go through a lot of classes necessarily if they're in a particular role, but what it does mean is they need to get training that's centric to their job role. Don't expect them just to go in front of a console and know what they're doing. Make sure that you're showing them the way to be effective with the tool. If it's an IT decision maker that's helping you implement, get them some ITIL Foundations training. If they're someone who's you're using some of the Moth service management functions, show them Moth. Have them train on Moth. The idea behind that is that helps you to understand why you're taking some of these approaches and why it's good for them. Get them excited about what you're doing, because most companies, at least the ones I've talked to, they hate their service management tools. They've got some service management tool out there. It's taken incidents. They just don't like it. And maybe there's a couple people who are holding on to it, and they're stakeholders in it, and they're holding on to that service management tool. But a lot of people are like, I just don't like this. So we're going to show them why we're going to transform their job, why this is going to make what they're doing better, why it's going to save them time. We want to show them that. That's what the training needs to do. It needs to pump them up about why this is an awesome platform and why it's going to change the way that they do what they do. So that's what your training needs to focus on. All right. The last piece of this, and something very, very important, is using a phased approach. I can't stress this enough. Service manager engagements, because they're not just deploying an Exchange server, they're not just deploying an SCCM server, they have a big opportunity to go into scope creep land. Because everybody's like, oh, can I do this additional function? Can I do this additional field? Can I track this kind of asset? Can I track this kind of request? What if I ask for, that's nice, but maybe if I had it do this other thing? Well, that other thing might be a 40-hour task that takes a lot of extra automation to do, right? Awesome task, and I get excited about that kind of thing because I love doing automation, but you need to make sure you check your can-do attitude sometimes a little bit and move it into a phased approach. So the idea of it is, that's an awesome idea. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Let's document it. Let's do it in the next phase. And the idea is to manage it sort of like a development project. Not in a heavy development project, but just in a way where you're saying, I'm documenting the things that we want to accomplish and document them in a way that allows us to prioritize them and make sure that by the time we go live, we're able to accomplish it in the time frame that we said we were going to succeed in. So what we do is we basically organize everything in an Excel spreadsheet. We say, here's our work plan. Here's all the things we want to get done. So what we do is say, here is our base configuration. Here's an extension that we want to have employed. Like, for example, deploy SCSM concurrency incident and service request extensions. That's a specific management pack that we built, that we deploy to be able to capture extra data. Deploy SCCM asset extension for idle and deployed. Maybe we want to capture some extra data about a computer that's now going into an idle mode that we want to track. Perhaps we want to create our request categories. We want to track all these things that we're going to perform. In this case, we're tracking the different types of templates that we're building inside of our process. The idea behind that is simply to make sure that you're organizing your tasks in a way which is helping you to be successful, and not just putting them on whiteboards and then giving a big chunk of tasks to someone and expecting them to be successful. This is what separates successful projects from failed projects. If you do not document what you intend to accomplish and prioritize correctly, you will fail. You need to make sure that you are organizing your project in a way which allows you to have success by not expanding scope beyond what you can reasonably accomplish. Have 50 phases. Organize it in smaller phases that allow you to be successful. I can't stress that enough, because this is a way that allows you to be able to attack these engagements in a way which is successful for your business and focuses on the right things. So after you found those two or three automations, get those two or three end-to-end processes in place, or at least to a level that you find is going to be successful for you, instead of simply focusing on the big picture all the time. Same with reports, same with performance points, same with anything. List off the things that you really want to accomplish within the context of this process. All right. How do we move forward? Let's go back to the beginning. Start with your business services list and service catalog. The business services list, again, is the things that you deliver from IT to the business. They are the practical deliverables that you are paid by the business to deliver to them. Start with organizing that business service list, because that's the framework from which you start. Then, determine what you want your service catalog to look like. Determine what those questions are that you want to ask of a person. What are the things that they want from you? If you figure out those things, then you're well on your way to being successful, because you're focusing on the things that the business is actually asking for, not on the things that you think they're asking for. Deploy automations which benefit your business. So you want to be able to deploy automations which benefit you as IT by making you more efficient. That benefits the business. You want to benefit the users by giving them their deliverable faster. And you want to benefit the business as a whole by giving them good data about what it is that you're actually doing. So deploy those automations and then transform the processes in a way which is going to make you successful. Check out some resources that are out there. Look at the Service Manager Survival Guide. That is a great tool. There's great blogs listed on there. There are great articles listed out there. Definitely check out the System Center Engineering blog. I think most of us folks who are using Service Manager right now pretty much follow that religiously. That is an awesome, awesome blog. Also on our blog, we're going to be posting the new user process. So we'll walk through how we accomplished our new user process, how we captured the data in the service requests and the request offering, how we took that data and pushed it into the automation in Orchestrator, and how we then delivered it to the Active Directory user and the Exchange user and Link user. We're going to post that up on the blog. Duncan's going to be working on that. And also, go and check out the way in which you create performance scorecards. That might be something that I think would be really helpful for you guys to be able to understand how you go about doing that. I think, for me, that's a way to kind of take something which is perceptibly really difficult, creating these dashboards, and makes it really simple and lets you understand really how am I accomplishing this. So I found that to be a really nice aspect of what we're doing here. So it's been a real blessing talking to you guys today. Thank you for the opportunity. If you have any questions, I'd love to take them up at your mics here.